This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, we'll hear from Senator John Cornyn from Texas, held a recent press conference via telephone. We'll have that for you in a moment. First off, let's talk topsoil moisture by state. Very short to short, Mark Brusberg is USDA meteorologist.
You don't really start to see concerns with topsoil moisture until you get to the Great Plains. Kansas was 46% short to very short, Texas 40. Montana, which just recently received some heavy rain, came into the week at 60% short to very short. And to a lesser extent, parts of the Mid-Atlantic, we've seen some drying. Virginia is 25% short to very short topsoil moisture. They were about 4 to 6% in the Mid-Atlantic surplus. Now we're starting to see some areas drying out a bit.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. On Thursday afternoon, Texas Senator John Cornyn holding a telephone press conference with reporters.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. As many of you who follow Texas know, we've had a longstanding problem with Mexico living up to its responsibilities under an international water treaty. Typically, what happens is they wait to see how much rainfall there will be and how much water is in the reservoirs and not meet their requirements under the treaty until the, let's say, the fourth or the fifth year out of a five-year treaty. In the meantime, given drought in South Texas and the need for water, many parts of our state are now in an imminent risk of losing the ability to generate power. And we've had some shutdowns of things like sugar businesses in South Texas, primarily because they just don't have the water to be able to grow the crop. But specifically, on the power front, without water delivery, the Amstead Reservoir is on track to fall below the minimum water level needed to keep the lights on, which is unacceptable. So I've spent a number of times over the years, but more recently, reaching out to the Mexican government and our counterparts there, from the ambassador to people at the State Department, like the Secretary of State, and try to figure out ways we can increase the pressure on Mexico to live up to its responsibilities under the treaty. And what we've decided is to send a bipartisan, bicameral letter to House and Senate Appropriations Committees on state and foreign operations, urging them to withhold funds from Mexico until they release the water they owe. I'm sorry that it's come to this, and if Mexico had, in good faith, worked with us to try to figure out how to come up with other alternatives, we would have welcomed that. But so far, the State Department refuses to put any meaningful pressure on Mexico. The administration insists on waiting for the entire term of the treaty before taking any punitive measures, which is too late. And I believe we need to send a strong and clear message that continued failure on the part of Mexico when it comes to fulfilling its obligations under this treaty is not an option. So this is something that, again, it's not a partisan issue. There's a bicameral, bipartisan letter, and we will continue to take that step and further steps necessary until we get Mexico to live up to its responsibilities. Meanwhile, on the border, the border continues to be a huge problem, and Senator Schumer, in the spirit of the election year, has decided to continue to push border legislation in an attempt to provide a fig leaf for Democrats for the failure of the Biden administration and Democrats to secure the border. They've now woken up to the fact that the chaos of the last 3.5 years due to Biden's open border policies is a real political problem for them, and they're trying to figure out how they can divert attention or provide some sort of deflection against their own failure to enforce the law. The problem is this bill is, number one, it codifies catch and release at unacceptable levels, and it doesn't really put any meaningful limit on the administration's parole authority. Just to remind you, the biggest problems we have at the border now is that basically we have an open border sign there or a carpet rolled out for anybody and everybody wants to show up. You can claim asylum, or failing that, then you can just simply be released under this abuse of parole authority, which is supposed to be handled on a case-by-case basis. If the president really wanted to fix the border, he has plenty of tools available to him now to do so. And essentially the same laws that were in effect during the Trump administration currently remain in effect, and we've seen dramatically different results. Primarily the difference is the will and the determination of the executive branch to actually enforce the laws on the books. But I don't think anybody's going to be fooled by this fig leaf effort here, this election eve conversion. The Democrats are in the same position they've always been in, and that has resulted in a deadly and dangerous situation and catastrophic impact on some of these migrants, particularly the unaccompanied children, and the families have been devastated by drugs that come across the border. And now the accountability for all of this is coming home to roost.
Senator Cornyn, yes. This is Pablo de la Rosa in the Rio Grande Valley for NPR in San Antonio. I have a question about the letter to the subcommittee on Mexico water. Mexico is also seeing economic fallout right now. I just saw this morning, you know, they lost 500,000 tons of sorghum in Tamaulipas. They're seeing a lot of damage and drought there, too. Would withholding the aid actually cause them to hold on to water to cut these economic losses or even break the agreement? What's the actual intended mechanic or plan of how Texas would get that water by withholding the funds?
Well, of course, we've tried diplomacy, and that's the reason why I've talked personally, along with other members of the Texas delegation, with the Secretary of State, and ask them to try to negotiate a diplomatic outcome. Obviously, we are we share a common fate, and unfortunately, common weather patterns. And unfortunately, when we have drought in South Texas, frequently the Mexico experiences the same problems. The main difficulty has been the repeated practice of waiting until the last minute or the last year to meet a 5-year or 10-year requirement under the treaty. Believe it or not, I remember being in Mexico City and talking to Mexican officials when I was attorney general in 1999 about the same problem. This is not a brand new issue. So obviously we don't want to do any harm to Mexican counterparts, but we are getting a little bit desperate, particularly in the face of the failure of the administration to actually use the tools they have available to them through diplomacy and negotiation. We are more than happy to for this to be a negotiated outcome, but we're running out of ways to get the attention of the Mexican government. And I believe that this is one necessary step we need to take. Again, hopefully we won't have to follow through on it and actually prevent these funds from flowing as a result of their failure to meet their obligations. But as I said, we're running out of ways to get their attention, and we think this is a necessary step.
Hi, good afternoon, Senator. This is Dina Arevalo with the Monitor. Thank you for making time for us. Going back to the issue of the failed Mexico water deliveries, I was able to speak with Congressman Vicente Gonzalez earlier this week, and he told me it was about $7.6 million that's at stake with this bipartisan, bicameral effort to withhold funding from Mexico. My question is twofold. One, is this really going to make a difference compared to the hundreds of millions in aid that the U.S. provides to Mexico every year? And two, given the fact that Mexican voters will be voting for a new president next month, how much is AMLO's lame duck presidency impacting the ability for us to negotiate with Mexico?
Well, thank you for the question. We didn't cause the problem. And so we are responding to a problem that the Mexican government created. And so we'd be happy for the problem to go away, which means that Mexico needs to do a course correction. And the only reason we're resorting to this is because other measures that we've undertaken through the State Department and elsewhere have been unsuccessful. And we've seen devastating consequences to local agriculture in the Rio Grande Valley, in particular as a result of the withholding of the water that they should be releasing on a regular basis. In terms of the election, I'm not sure there's much we can do to impact the election. We know President Lopez Obrador is a relatively popular figure, and he may condemn this action by the U.S. Frankly, I don't really care what he says. What I care about is trying to make sure my constituents in the Rio Grande Valley and elsewhere are get the benefit of the water that they are entitled to under this treaty. And as far as the specific dollar amount, as I said earlier, my hope is that that will not actually be necessary. There's some question as to how much money might be eligible to be withheld. Ultimately, that's going to be a decision made by the Appropriations Committee and in consultation with us. But it could be a whole lot more than the figure you mentioned. And if that's not successful, then we may have to resort to other more extreme measures.
Is it maybe time to renegotiate the 1944 treaty? If this just doesn't work year after year after year, is it time to renegotiate in the second part? House considering a farm bill pretty soon. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, let me start with the easy part, which is the farm bill. As you know, it expires at the end of September, and we have not met our timetable for taking up and passing a farm bill, but I'm hopeful that we can get it done by the end of September, the end of the fiscal year. As far as renegotiating the treaty is concerned, that may be what needs to happen, because there may need to be some additional enforcement measures that are lacking in the current treaty. Right now, it depends on the good faith of the Mexican government and the U.S. government to comply with the demands in both countries. And obviously, Mexico's decided to favor Mexican agriculture over U.S. agriculture. That's an unacceptable outcome. And what we need is, whatever the amount of water in the reservoir exists, that there needs to be at least an equal treatment between the Mexican side and U.S. side, not have the Mexican government hoard the water for the benefit of their agriculture and deny that to Texas. That's just an unacceptable outcome.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, highlights from a press conference with Senator John Cornyn.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Are you planning on fence or brushwork on your ranch this summer? West Texas Attachments has the skid steer attachments you need to make the job easier. Clear the way with their rock and brush grapple and drive posts quickly and accurately with the Montana Post Driver. They also have a tree and post puller that will handle trees up to 3 inches in diameter. West Texas Attachments also offers low-cost delivery to your area. Call Brad at 806-548-7167 or visit westtexasattachments.com to get the skid steer attachments to make your job easier.
Welcome back. You're listening to our comprehensive look at agribusiness news, markets, and weather. This is the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report.
Some more good news for food shoppers. The latest consumer price index numbers are out there for April. They show grocery store food prices last month rising at an almost imperceptible 0.1%.
So over the past few months, we've seen food price inflation that's lower than the long-term average.
And Agriculture Department economist Megan Schweitzer says grocery store food prices are on average only about 1% higher than April a year ago.
We've really seen inflation for food at home, for groceries, stabilize over the past few months. Prices increased by 0.1% in April, and that was following up on March, which showed no change, and February, which also showed a very small increase of 0.1%.
Some food categories are selling for less than last year, including eggs, dairy products, and fish and seafood. Gary Crawford, Washington.